Magnetic field of the Earth, making almost 16 revolutions every 24 hours. As you see, Skylab's orientation with respect to the nearby magnetic field is constantly changing. The uniqueness of the Earth's magnetic field has led some to the conclusion that this field may have been a vital factor even in the development of life here on Earth. We also know that even minute changes in the Earth's magnetic field, both its strength and in its direction, can seriously interfere with some aircraft instruments and also ships' compasses. And this can lead to endangering lives when their navigation is performed by reference to the strength and direction of the Earth's magnetic field. This field also is basically related to the appearance of aurora, or northern and southern lights, as we call them. And
the time will be 3 o'clock. CBS News. It's been a banner day on Wall Street on word the Arabs will ease their oil restrictions to Japan, Britain, and other Western European nations. I'm Steve Young, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Lowell Thomas brings you news from Brussels, from Washington, from China, comes today's news as reported by America's foremost newscaster, Lowell Thomas. Now,
here's news of the hour on the hour from American Information Radio. This is Merrill Muller in Los Angeles, and at this hour...
Okay, set to counter 6-9, light at point 8, and trim to minus...
Sun under the comet Kohoutek, mission commentator Jack Barling has the tape.
Found in 7 of 8 structural beams in the rocket, authorities called off the planned Thursday launch. There's a possibility for a Friday liftoff now, but that, the officials say, is iffy. They're going to try to repair the new cracks in the 7-year-old rocket, and if they can't do that, a delay of weeks may be needed.
At Cape Canaveral today, inspectors found more suspected cracks in the Saturn 1B rocket to be used in the Skylab 3 mission, causing another delay in the launch. The earliest possible launch date now is Friday.
The launch of Skylab 3 has been delayed
Skylab
at least until
Houston
Friday and possibly longer because of the possibility of cracks in the booster rocket. The launch had been scheduled for last Saturday, then was postponed until this Thursday because of cracks in the rocket's fins before today's announcement of the additional delay. The space agency today cleared the Skylab 3 rocket for launch on Friday morning, and NBC will cover it live. The start of the mission had been delayed twice because of tiny cracks in the rocket.
Cape Canaveral today, engineers activated the Saturn rocket that will launch the Skylab 3 astronauts into space on Friday. An 85-day mission is planned. The launch was postponed twice because of cracks found in parts of the rocket. Some of the cracks remain, but NASA said today there does not appear to be any danger.
From that launch pad tomorrow morning, three rookie astronauts, leaving their 13 children behind, take off to spend Christmas orbiting the Earth. Their mission, man's longest stay in the hostile environment of space. Skylab 3, an open-ended flight that could last as long as 3 months. Today, the crew unwound by flying jets through the sunny Florida skies. Gerald Carr and William Pogue and Edward Gibson, it's been a long wait. 7 years in the astronaut program for Carr and Pogue, 8 years for scientist Gibson. Two final delays caused by cracks in the launch rocket. And it's waited for 8 years, too. But astronauts and space officials are confident now of an on-time 9 a.m. start for a mission crowded with experiments measuring the crew's physical responses and giving man the best view he's ever had of a visitor from outer space. A close-up look at the comet Kohoutek, now burning a fiery trail through our planetary system. Also, many, many photographs of sun and Earth to advance man's knowledge of both. Morton Dean has a report.
Service module near to Skylab Space Station.
Some 160,000 Skylab photos of the Earth and sun are on file now. Tens of thousands more to be recorded on this coming mission. It could take a decade or longer for scientists to conduct a thorough analysis of the photos. One Earth resource scientist claims he could spend 1 year on one picture and not run out of points of interest.
The astronauts were hoisted aboard helicopters using little bird cages, such as we see here, then flown back to the recovery carrier itself. Well, we should be seeing those little bird cages in a second. This time, instead of using the bird cages in the conventional Helo 1, Recovery 1 rescue techniques, the astronauts will stay inside the spacecraft until it's been lifted aboard the carrier. A crane on the hangar deck will be used to hoist the spacecraft aboard. They've tried this a number of times in practice sessions, and everybody's confident the carrier, a 42,000-ton carrier, can be maneuvered into position with no danger of banging into the spacecraft. It's also faster, this type of recovery technique, taking as little as 30 minutes in past practice sessions, although they'll be much more cautious today. Once safely on the hangar deck of the Ticonderoga, the command module will be placed on a dolly. Dr. Joe Kerwin, himself, still inside the command module, will then do a quick blood pressure and heart rate check on himself, Conrad, and Weitz. If they're okay, they'll crack the hatch and then walk about 50 feet to the mobile medical labs contained in vans on the hangar deck to begin the elaborate medical tests. These labs, of course, are far more intensive, elaborate than anything that's been used before during any past Apollo recovery.
Jules, Mission Control announced just a short while ago that the last simulation, just a couple of days ago on board the Ticonderoga, they were able to get the spacecraft up on the deck between 30 and 35 minutes. But it probably will take a bit longer today, won't it?
I think Captain Green of the Tycho said we'll never do this well when we're doing the real thing. We're all going to be too concerned about running down that little spacecraft with a 42,000-ton carrier.
Yeah, some seamanship is involved here. ABC News will bring you more on the first Skylab mission after this message.
Although this first Skylab mission did not exactly follow the original flight plan, today's splashdown sequence has really not changed much from the original plan. The three astronauts in their command module separated from the orbiting laboratory at 5:40 a.m. this morning, Eastern Time. A few seconds before 9:34, or about 4 hours after separation, they will knife through the atmosphere 75 miles above the Earth.
...of Saving Skylab, America's first space station documentary. You can view the documentary at savingskylab.com, as well as YouTube. On this episode...
Dozens, if not more.
Yeah.
Because there's so many people working on it, and everybody's got a great story. So this one just has the kind of components in it that spoke to me, and I hope it'll be of interest to other people as well. Seems to be every time I've told it, people love it.
Yeah. Going back to, I guess, when David was doing research for the book, how did he get in contact with you, or how did he find out about what you guys were doing at the time on the mission? How did that come about?
I remember getting a call from Owen Garriott. Owen, as you know, was one of the crew members on Skylab. And Owen and I worked together on Space Lab a number of years later. But Owen lived here in Huntsville. And By the way, we lost Owen last year. That was just a terrible loss. A wonderful, wonderful person and great representative for American spaceflight in the country. And Owen invited me over to his house, and David was there, Owen was there, Dr. Joe was on the other end of the line, and it was very much like what we're doing here. Owen kicked it off, and they were recording, of course, with a little desktop recorder, nothing sophisticated. And we just started kicking it around, and when I started the story, I just kept on going with it until it was done, and they had a couple other questions. But the really nice thing about that, I'm an electrical engineer, and I went out there from Detroit, where I grew up and went to school, Detroit Institute of Technology. Boeing was working on the Minuteman program, and that seemed like a fun thing to do, and signal conditioners and doing a lot of really fun electrical engineering stuff. And after that slowed down a little bit, I heard about an opening at NASA and switched over. It was in an electrical networks area, very, very close to what we had been doing with the Saturn V first stage checkout, S1C. In the middle of that, a friend of mine, whose name is Dick Heckman, came over and got talking about what he was doing at NASA, which was some human factor stuff, developing tools and techniques and human interfaces for primarily for astronauts and other users too. And he and I had been doing some sports car racing together. I was a pit crew on his team, and also on developing the EVA trail that was required in order for the crew to get the cameras back from the Apollo telescope mount. Several times during each mission, the camera canisters would run out of film, and they would have to go out and do an EVA, retrieve the canisters, replace them with fresh ones. And There were a number of them, and they were all in different places scattered around the ATM. So the challenge was to come up with a routing, and which involved handholds, foot restraint, umbilical routing procedures, foot restraints at the workstations where they would actually pull the old cans out and replace them with the new ones. These were, by the way, these were red box and larger size. They weren't little cassettes.
Okay, now we're going up the valley. Now we're going up to the Shenandoah Valley and approaching Harrisburg.
Ordinary road map helps to identify the Skylab photos before making them available to the public and to scientists of the Gulf of California.
The target point for splashdown is in the Pacific Ocean at the center of a landing area about 600 miles long and about 150 miles wide. The astronauts are aiming for a landing at 9:50 Eastern Time in the ocean at a point 830 miles southwest of San Diego, California.
But the medical knowledge on how well men can take a two-month-long space flight is the single biggest objective. There are fewer doubts this time, but there are still doubts. They plan to double their exercise time to an hour a day to fight off the effects of weightlessness. Carrying hundreds of pounds of new items, from extra underwear and seasoning to spice up their food, to film and experiments, it's the heaviest Apollo spacecraft ever launched.
The missions get longer, tougher, and more dangerous, yet are somehow accepted as being commonplace by the people. And NASA has yet to prove the ultimate value of space to mankind, which is the real goal of Skylab. This is Jules Bergman, ABC News, reporting at Cape Kennedy.
Flight director Bill Sheffer going around the room here in the control center taking...
I'm a so-called pilot on this mission.
Astronaut Jack Lausma from Grand Rapids, Michigan, is the second of the Skylab 3 crewmen. Lausma is 37 years old.
Command module, environmental control, electrical power systems, communication, and so forth. Once we get to the Skylab, our jobs are pretty much the same. We're not too specialized. I'll participate in the solar physics experiments and medical experiments and Earth resources. However, I do have some specialty areas in the event that we have problems with the systems on board the Skylab or systems problems with the Earth resources equipment. But by and large, we've trained to the point now where most anybody can handle any job once we get up there in orbit.
Jack Lausma is especially interested in the Earth resources experiments.
By looking down from space with remote sensors, we can tell much about what's on the ground. Each object on the ground has its own electromagnetic radiation, which is collected by the sensor on board. And we can tell, for example, the difference between barley and oats and corn, different kinds of crops. We can tell those that are diseased from those which are well. We can tell different
kinds of trees from one another. We can see fresh water as opposed to polluted water, or we can see air pollution as opposed to clean air. There are many things that we can see from space with a sensor.
ABC News will provide live coverage of tomorrow's launch from Cape Time. I'll be back with tonight's comment in a moment.
Plowing through the atmosphere creates an electrical storm of sorts.
Quite hot.
You have a blanket of electricity. Drifts off into space, dissipating and absorbing heat as it does. It's less than 3 inches thick and really is a remarkable piece of engineering and scientific work. The wind out there now at the splashdown point said to be about 15 miles per hour. As you see, there are some puffs of clouds. Seas between 6 and 8 feet. Does that sound good to an old sailor such as yourself, Wally?
Well, that's
seasickness.
That could be a rough day. The wind you're seeing now aboard ship, of course, is the ship is steaming into the wind. The crew itself on the ocean is, I've always said it, is in what I would call a good spacecraft.
This is Skylab Control.
I'm sure it comes true every time, each one of us.
Interestingly enough, for the first time, NASA has ordered astronauts to take ocean sickness preventative
tracking station
several hours ago.
Next station.
Of course, this was the crew that suffered a severe case of motion sickness early in the flight, which kept them pretty much on their backs. We have radar contact now. We're from the ship that there is radar contact.
That's a very consoling thing, because that's a real surface contact from the ship itself. And of course, that always excites each one of us, realizing we're essentially in touch with the local scene.
The blackout should be ending in just about 5 or 6 seconds, and perhaps we'll be hearing from Captain Bean, Major Lausma, and Owen Garriott.
Ticonderoga is on station, waiting to take the crew aboard. And that will be that old carrier's final mission, picking up these Skylab astronauts. Roy Neal and Jim Hartz, how's it going in Houston?
John, we've been joined by a guest, Rusty Swecker, who is the backup command pilot for the Skylab mission. And without taking anything away from the astronauts who've been working in space, this man has been working on Earth about as hard, I think. I don't think they did anything up there that you hadn't tested first down here in the tank at Huntsville and various things like that. It's been quite a month for terminal
phases. It has. It's been a lot of fun, but a lot of work. Should have
taken place. I think the full flight was ready to sit back and relax after several years of training, I guess, but it just didn't turn out that way. He'll be with us for the rest of the morning. I understand, have a picture from the aircraft carrier Ticonderoga. We're going to switch out there in a few minutes and have a report. There you can see it. It's on station. And everything is going according to schedule, and we believe.
Jim, it's interesting to note, by the way, as we look at the Ticonderoga this morning, that they've got about 1,800 feet of overcast weather, which doesn't promise too well for our television view of the parachutes as they land. There is a slight breeze, about 12 knots. The waves are about 4 feet high, and the temperature 67 degrees.
They're going to arrive back in the same kind of weather that they left in. They launched from Cape Kennedy in an overcast day, and they're coming back with one.
So with a little different feeling.
Yeah, I'll bet a little bit different feeling. Yeah. How do you think you feel now after 28 days up there, record-breaking space flight?
I think they're going to be floating down here for about the next month or two.
There was
a lot of concern, Rusty, before the flight, what kind of condition it would be in back. There were three Soviet astronauts who spent 18 days in space and had to be taken out, carried out of the spacecraft. What's the general thinking this morning on whether they'll have to be carried out or whether they'll walk?
I'll tell you what we expect and what we prepare for. What we expect to happen is that we'll see them get out of the spacecraft on the carrier and walk over into the medical area for their post-flight medical tests. And that's the way we anticipate doing it. It's the way we plan doing it. However, we do have an alternate, an option set up, which would be used in case in Joe Kerwin, who's of course the doctor on board, in his estimation, that would be too difficult, it would be too strenuous, or would in any way degrade the medical data, then the option is there for the three astronauts to be put on a stretcher-like device and carried into the medical area for their first flight test. But I expect that will not be used.
Jim, I'd just like to make this note. We expect communication from the astronauts now in about 7 minutes. Now, they've had a good communications check with the range instrumented aircraft. Apparently, we can expect some kind of word on how well the astronauts are making out, how well they have succeeded in coming back through the atmosphere in that time.
Okay, we're going to switch out to the aircraft carrier Ticonderoga now off the coast of California, and our reporter there is Bill Walker.
Here we go. That is a live shot mini ready to go into videotape after a couple of live shots.
And Pete, we still have about 8 minutes left in this mess.
Tape is coming up now. Close up of Captain Green. We are into the tape piece, running approximately 2 minutes. We'll go back to Bill Walker. This is Hal Klassen, Jim. A radio sound? Yes, surely.
Are they having a problem with their communications? We owe you an explanation there. They've got obviously got a problem with their communications. Some lines are crossed, and instead of hearing Bill Walker, we were obviously hearing a director or a producer or someone detailing what the various pictures were. And I think what we saw was a general shot of the picture, the captain and a couple of people on board the helicopters.
Word from the ship that they have had radar contact, as we reported just a moment ago.
It's interesting to note that your remark about the crew being ordered to take motion sickness pills is in contrast to the earlier days when we were essentially fighting to prove that we had physical stamina.
Radar acquisition.
We were kind of proud of the fact that we could come off a flight and walk down that red carpet on the carrier, but it's a difficult task in any case. But here, you've seen a true physiological test of almost 2 months, so it's right that the crew should lie back in their couches and rest and see how they look after they come back aboard.
And the first Skylab crew, all three of them were wobbly and woozy. They insisted on walking out of their command module, and you could tell that they were feeling the effects of 28 days in space, and here you have these men returning from a mission twice as long.
Contact. Probably coming first from one of the two HC-130 aircraft.
Helicopters are already airborne. Should be four of them now. Ready to move in to the splashdown point about 220 miles southwest of San Diego. Command module moving northwest to southeast.
AOS to the last.
Voice of Skylab now.
Skylab, you think that you're ready?
Out of the blackout, you should be hearing from them any moment.
our concerns about that service module over. The command module seems to be working.
The man attempting to communicate with the capsule is Robert Crippen. And the other voice you will hear, the voice of Skylab, giving us some background information and information as the command module heads into the Pacific, will be John McLeish. Still about 2 minutes before the first parachutes come out to begin to slow that command module down. He's traveling at more than 11,700 miles per hour. Still no voice contact. That helicopter is situated where it is. Wally will probably see the command module above the clouds, and then the chopper will drop down below, and we'll see it from below.
Do it whenever they see fit. Most of the solar studies are scheduled by mission control, but it's been determined that the crew has a better idea. As we hear from mission commentator Dennis Williams.
Past Bill Lenore, a scientist astronaut, conducted the daily science conference on solar astronomy. One of the things he pointed out to the crew was that the ground is now expecting the crew to play a much larger role in determining its solar experiment operations. The reasoning being that the crew has immediate data on solar activity while the ground is somewhat behind as they plan 24 hours or more in advance of a day's activity. Along that line, science pilot Ed Gibson indicated at the end of the pass that he had seen a relatively little activity on the sun, but an enhanced streamer has been observed above active region 00, which is now passing off the right edge of the sun. Active region 00 is the most active area on the sun during the past couple of weeks. Produced several M-class or medium-sized flares, and also generated a sunspot that's the largest that's been seen on the solar disk this year, approximately 20,000 miles across, and that sunspot is expected to stay there for quite some time.
Gerald Gore, Ed Gibson, Bill Pope also scheduled to take another spacewalk tomorrow. They'll be taking pictures of the comet Kohoutek. Dr. Kohoutek, here at the Johnson Space Center, he discovered the comet and will be discussing the solar phenomenon with the crew this afternoon. I'm David Train.
0.2 of a foot per second in one axis.
Who's the edge?
Washington, the U.S. Court of Appeals has ordered Watergate conspirators E. Howard Hunt and Bernard Parker released from prison while their appeals are being considered. I'm Dick Reeves reporting on the CBS radio network.
This display radar trailing distance at this point.
For the long New Year's weekend, they find gasoline in shorter supply than over the Christmas weekend. I'm Jim Kilpatrick reporting on the CBS radio network. The NASA have completed half of their 84-day, 33 million mile space voyage,
1 hour,
and zeroed in on a spectacular show of light from the comet Kohoutek. The comet made its closest approach to the sun this morning, then began streaking off into deep space, not to return for perhaps 75,000 years.
In an orbit measuring 235.5, apogee 227.9, nautical, and perigee. Stay up live.
A book is published in France, and its writer waits for Soviet retribution. I'm Stuart Novins reporting on the CBS radio network.
This is Skylab Control standing by.
Over to CBS World News Office. Astronauts walk in space today for the second time this week to photograph the comet Kohoutek. Paying close attention to any changes since that ball of ice streaked within 14 million miles of the sun.
I think probably a training exercise where they were practicing recovering the
made a pretty good
capsule.
Preview for us, wouldn't you say?
At least we know pictorially what we can expect.
Yeah, I think we'll get that straightened out. I hope we will before it's splashdown.
Matter of fact, we expect to see those scenes coming up at about 50 minutes after the hour. That looks to me on the watch like just about 16, 17 minutes away. We're getting very close, gentlemen. About 4 minutes from contact. Rusty, how do you feel right now about this group?
Oh, I wish I'd been there. They obviously have been having a ball, really. I mean, it's been such an enjoyable flight, aside from the fact that they were able to, in a sense, rescue what was looking to be a very sad situation. They not only did it with flair, but they also had a heck of a lot of fun afterward, and then carrying out the mission and getting all the scientific information that we're so eagerly anticipating here. Some holes.
Yeah, you can see it. So maybe we will get a view of it before. Well, they should be nearing the end of their blackouts, and we expect communication here in about a minute and a half as they come into the range of that aircraft that's standing by to relay communications back to us here at the Johnson Space Center.
Roy, I think we're seeing now a view from on top of the clouds, if I'm not mistaken.
That's probably the photo helo, helicopter.
We may get some very good photos of the spacecraft coming down from on top.
Good point. Told that we should hear from them in about 3 minutes. I don't know whether we'll ever hear from our reporter out there.
That's right. End of blackout is at 40 minutes and 12 seconds after the hour, and Mission Control has just reported that we can expect communication within seconds after that.
Command module. That spaceship weighs about 12,000 pounds. Do you have a sensation of falling at the stage of the game?
Yes, you do. You're really in the 1G field, as we call it now, which is what we feel sitting here in a television console, in that sense. But you're anxiously waiting for those parachutes, because they are a rather beautiful sight after those 2 months of looking at Earth.
Roger.
It's apparent you're modulating there, but you were unreadable.
No clear communication with the command module yet, Wally.
Apparently they had some signal. They didn't,
and Skylab
wasn't
Houston, we want quads Bravo and Delta to the PSM when you can.
Despite all of our success, this is a nervous moment, isn't it? Waiting for a definitive word.
I get those moist hands on recovery as well as I do on liftoff.
I never believed it till I saw it. Your hands are sweaty.
That means I'm aware of the problem.
Persistent leave the confines of the giant station to spend 3.5 hours tracking Kotak's path across the heavens. We implore the main inside, roll the station over to point the cameras at the comet. Carr and Polk set a spacewalk record of 7 hours Christmas Day, but officials said today's venture should only take half that time with fewer tasks to perform.
They say the comet Kohoutek is getting brighter now that it has whipped around the sun and is speeding back out into deep space. Astronaut Ed Gibson had a radio conversation with Dr. Lubos Kohoutek of Czechoslovakia, who discovered the comet, and the astronaut told him its exception.
Skylab Houston, did you copy my request to Bravo and Delta quads to the PSM?
Everything's on PSM, Houston.
Roger, thank you much.
Yeah.
I read you loud and clear, Pete. Tell me.
Okay, I'm on Fox. You'll hear it all.
Okay, good. And CDR Houston, we're going to be starting.
Start breaking right now.
Roger.
Used big photographic plates. That's pretty much what we did up to Skylab launch. I guess then the rest of the story begins there.
So in the documentary, you talk about the safety concerns.
Those guys down there, but had a reasonably good relationship with them, and then Lance program where several, at least one for sure, EVA was tried. And primarily, we think, because of lack of foot restraints, that was less than stellar. A lot of thought went on about how to make things easier for the crew and safer as well. And I should say at the start that Marshall was involved in this because our center had responsibility for the Skylab part of it. JSC in Houston was really busy getting the shuttle ready. And so Marshall was chosen as kind of the lead center for all of that, which meant that we got involved in some crew stuff, which was traditionally the responsibility of Johnson in Houston. So we were kind of following the lead of those guys down there, but had a reasonably good relationship with them and kept that fairly friendly all the way through that whole process, even though there was a good bit of rivalry going on at the time. So none of this was done in a vacuum. We realized from the start that the only way that the crew could actually do good work was to have a foot restraint. And we came up with some ideas, did some brainstorming, sent them down to Johnson. They countered with some other designs and approaches, and ultimately they came up with the final design for the foot restraint. And in fact, that's what was used almost unchanged up through the Hubble era. But then we also had to worry about potential for umbilicals to get snagged by structure. One of the things that you always need to worry about with a pressure suit is a puncture. So you go through the design and build a mock-up, simulate it in 1G, simulate it in 0G, and the KC-135 aircraft, where we get about 25 seconds of weightlessness, and in the neutral buoyancy tank, where the crewman and his suit can be balanced out to be neutral in the water. It doesn't rise, it doesn't fall, and it doesn't take any particular preferred orientation. It takes a little while to do that, and the swimmers that do that, the divers, do a marvelous job. We don't do that at Marshall anymore, but Johnson does still. And all three of those simulation modes gave us a wonderful opportunity to try some of these things. And of course, when you were looking ahead for potential problems, you really have to kind of go through it in your mind, much as an athlete runs through a sequence of whatever they do in the game. I guess the thing that we got pretty proud of was the ability to put ourselves in the position of the user and evaluate the design with brutal objectivity and do it over and over and over again.
The drogue chutes come out to stabilize it through the Mach 1 area as they transition from supersonic to less than supersonic.
That will slow the spacecraft down from about 316 miles an hour to about 178 miles an hour. Those drogues out for 40 seconds or so. There are three sets of chutes, the drogues, the pilots, and the mains. Still no word. They've had some kind of contact, but I believe I heard the capsule communicator saying, "We can't read you clearly." We asked Dr. Robert Caldwell to describe some of what he sees on one photo.
And each of these implies the emission of X-rays or ultraviolet radiation, which implies elevated temperatures and densities in that region.
Skylab, with well over 1,000 Earth revolutions, begins its 75th day in orbit.
Skylab, we're about 1 minute from
Except for ground sonar observations, its systems have been mostly silent for more than a month, having been powered down when its first tenants departed. Today, the slumbering space station will again be brought to life when the second crew arrives for an extended stay. Their journey will begin at Kennedy Space Center, Launch Complex 39, embarkation point for most of space history. Transportation for the flight is the two-stage Saturn 1B, which is well along in the pre-dawn countdown. In nearby launch control, the vigil is centered in firing room 3. The staccato of digital readouts tells the launch team that all systems are go, The countdown is smooth, almost routine. For the crew, the lectures, the briefings, the simulations, almost 2 years of intensive training is behind them. Today, they begin the real thing. Navy Captain Alan Bean, senior member of the crew, is Skylab commander. In November 1969, as lunar module pilot of Apollo 12, he walked on the moon. The science astronaut and civilian member is Owen Garriott. He brings to this mission a well-rounded background in science and engineering. The pilot, Marine Corps Major Jack Lausma, who served on support crews for three Apollo missions. For the three of them, the longest space flight ever is about to unfold.
Off right at the T0 mark. We pass the 15-second mark in the count. T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. We have ignition sequence start. All ignitions are running. All engines running. We have a liftoff.
Never been a smoother launch sequence. Rendezvous occurred just off the U.S. Pacific coast, almost 8 hours following liftoff.
This is Skylab Control. 7 hours, 53 minutes, ground elapsed time. Skylab 2, ground elapsed time.
Main chutes should be out any moment.
We've been spoiled by seeing this in real time.
Are going over. Drawing.
Interesting to see how she'll look when we get closer.
Documentary photographs.
The main chutes will slow the spacecraft down from about 178 miles an hour down to that somewhat pleasurable 19.
The ship that they have a visual on the bridge of the ship that the descending spacecraft is visible from the bridge of the ship.
That's good news. Yeah. They haven't heard much from it, but they can see it.
Helicopter makes similar reports.
Portions of the microfiber shield and slid back underneath the.
Communication is not very good out there.
But that the butterfly hinge.
No, I'd be much more comfortable if I could hear them say a few words, because this is a new milestone in spaceflight of 2 months
there. There it is. There it is.
They also reported being able to see the attacks for thruster attitude control system.
All three chutes appear to have opened.
I think I heard the crew's voices that last transmission.
Gas, nitrogen.
Roger, copy.
On the thruster attitude control system.
Skylab crew heading home after 59 and a half days in space. The longest space flight, the longest trip in the history of mankind.
You can really grind out the miles in Earth orbit because you don't slow down as you do en route to the moon and back. There are times when you slow down at like 6,000 miles an hour. Here, if you got down to 6,000 miles an hour, you wouldn't be in orbit very long.
Midway through the State South Pass.
Not the best pictures we've ever seen from out there, Wally.
No, the way the early shots look, the ship, of course, has good pictures, but not close enough. Here, that's a good shot. Apparently the helicopter isn't shining. That's probably from the ship itself.
The helicopter with the camera on board was ordered to keep at least 2 miles away from the spacecraft because during the last flight, there was some debris from re-entry on the helicopter. And as you know, helicopters, someone once said, they're not really made to fly. I don't have the redundant parts that fixed-wing aircraft have.
I always felt it was sort of an accident looking for a place, although I had some helicopter training, of course, preparing for the lunar mission.
Goes off at
1/3 of an acre of material in those three chutes, each one 83 and a half feet in diameter. You could throw one heck of a lawn party under one of those.
Could you?
Like orange and white.
About the upcoming station pass.
Why do they call it international orange?
This was a color agreed on by the various nations that got into the accord so that we could see this color. And a lot of the aircraft were marked with this for recognition. And it does show, of course, at a great distance. And that orange is a rescue color, a survival color. So if you see it, you should report it.
About 1 minute, 30 seconds, 1.5 minutes before the scheduled splashdown. Of course, the wind conditions could alter that a few seconds either way. There she is. Still communication very poor.
Our old aviator statement is they're clear straight in. And they have controlled the traffic pattern.
The commander of that ship, Alan Bean, now the most experienced spaceman. Putting his 59 days aboard the Skylab together with 8 or 9 days aboard the Apollo 12. That record might just well stand for some time, Wally, because the next crew of Skylab astronauts, they are all space rookies.
They are, that's true. They've been waiting a long time for that next ride, though. You're right, they have not tasted the thrill and exhilaration of one of these missions. It's also good to see those three chutes out. You recall back in Apollo 15, we had one that wasn't working too well. And in this sense, they'll have a relatively soft landing. By no means would I recommend it as a normal practice, but it does do a credible job when you think that you're lying on your back and you can take this landing impact. Ideally, the water should be somewhat broken up by the wind because it makes a better penetration.
The water does act as a shock absorbent, and you can notice the command module comes in on its toe. It's just leaning into the water, and we're going to see it splash down in a second now. There it is. It's about 6 miles from the ship.
I always like to say the ship is 6 miles from the ship.
Anyway, you want it. You outrank me. Well, she's in the water. Should learn now whether it is what NASA will call stable one or stable two, either right side up or upside down. If it's upside down, they can right it very easily by inflating some balloons.
Settle down in the water downwind from the spacecraft. The helicopter is expected to move in shortly.
Well, that stable two, if I remember right, is the one where you're lying on your face, occurs. It's not a very comfortable because you're essentially hanging on straps face down.
Sure it isn't.
And I would hope that they do go to stable one.
The solar cell is clear.
It's by no means that critical, but here they're essentially the blood rushes to your head, and it's just an awkward position that you're not accustomed to.
As it was splashing, Wally said there are shock absorbers.
You can still see the drogue and parachute sending down to about 2,000 feet.
Well, that remark was about the other chutes, of course, pulled away when the main chutes came out and they come down on their own.
There are four shock absorbers on one edge of the command module. They're made out of crushable aluminum. So when that spaceship hits the water, those tend to absorb much of the shock. And I believe there are shock absorbers on the couches themselves. It's a leg of the couch.
They're more readily used or required, as a better way of saying it, when you have an event on a land landing. You need a very good shock attenuation.
I remember the first time we did this, Wally, I said that would lead one to expect a rather soft landing, such as the one we saw here, and you winced.
Pointed down into the ocean itself. There are three plastic bags that inflate rather slowly, and as they do,
the spacecraft seems to be upright.
Of course, you're seeing a very happy crew in that ship also. The turn is some 600 miles long, and I can land at the far end of it or the near end of it or either side. And in this particular entry we're making right now, the splash point is actually north of the ground track. That is, they'll be turning a little bit to the north during the entry to land at the splash point.
This is controlled by the spacecraft itself.
Yes, sir, and we can control it in several different ways. The computers are not directly under you when you land, but they actually have to maneuver a little bit on the carrier, and as a result, they really are not on the splash point. So the distance from the carrier is really not the criterion of the best landing.
That's right. As a matter of fact, the Ticonderoga right now should be downwind by a number of miles, ready to time at a true speed.
So that's the second reason why they want to get the spacecraft on board the carrier as quickly as possible. And it shouldn't be more than an hour, but as Roy said, the last practice run ran 33 minutes. So that's roughly what we can look forward to.
Looking for that hole.
Skylab Houston through the Rye, how do you rate?
Is the meteor run shield slightly wrapped around? Is it on the side of the main tunnel or the underside?
Of course, that's Dick Truly, the Capcom, making a call to let them know that they're potentially, at least, in communication.
Skylab Houston through a Rye 1, how do you rate?
Especially on this plane.
I have a hard time.
A bit of activity on the deck there now.
There are helicopters in the area, and if the plan is still the same, some of the paradivers would go down to the spacecraft and make sure everything was all right. They do have the capability to take them out of the spacecraft.
In addition, we can look at soils, we can look at snowpacks, we can look at the oceans to see where the best shipping routes are or where the most fish are likely to be. There's a host of applications of Earth resources, many of which are just now coming out of the woodwork and which we're finding as a result of our studies in this area.
A piece of experimental equipment the crew will evaluate is shown here during ground simulations. Lausma explains its use.
We have on board the Skylab, two maneuvering units, one of which
green,
is the type
Teflon
Buck Rogers
on the underside of the meteoroid shield that you were probably coming in on just a minute
essentially,
ago.
Essentially, it's a way to maneuver around in space in a free-floating area
right
without hanging onto anything and go from one thing to another.
The
purpose
of the
Skylab is to evaluate
this
as a flying device to see if we can use it in later applications in space.
And Skylab Houston, request you go to peak light on the TV so we can see a little bit better down in the crevice.
We couldn't have been more successful than we were, but
okay,
it would have enabled us to do a better job. We can strap this flying backpack onto this and control it by little jet thrusters with end controllers.
And Pete, one question that I would like to ask you, and that is, you said you could see the butterfly engine a while ago. Could you tell us the condition of it?
To another,
well, the butterfly engine underneath,
or some of those other kinds of applications, you can see the advantage of having a backpack or a maneuvering unit, which is operated by one man.
It'll come up right over.
Those three astronauts are going to be mighty glad they took those seasickness pills, will they?
I think you're quite right. It's you can see it heaving. That's an old Navy expression in the sea there.
Here's our home in the sky, Dick.
Houston, we're going to have trouble getting out of this thing.
Dick, is really blowing in the breeze. Looks like about a 10 or 15 knot gale every time the thrusters fire. It's just a very gentle fly around here.
Roger, we were watching that very thing there.
I think he'll probably knock off the fly around at this point to avoid blowing that dirt all the way.
Skylab Houston, we've taken a look at both the CSM and the Swiss. They both look good. Sure, go for docking. We're about a minute and a half from LOS.
Roger.
Okay, we're docked. That went real well.
Still got about 9 minutes left in this pass.
An oxidizer leak in one of the quad thrusters was the only blemish on otherwise perfect flight. The leak would mean a slight loss in attitude control on the return flight. But at this point, it appeared to be well within backup control capabilities.
Now, where would you like to go?
Leaving the detailed analysis to ground specialists, the crew wasted no time moving into their temporary home. Within an hour, they had begun restoring Skylab to a living, working environment.
All right, let's get down. I gotta get out of the way. It's just gone. We're gonna get down.
Watch Washington, Baltimore. The Grand Canyon. Cape Cod. The drought area of Africa. From handheld and Earth resources cameras, our planet was photographically documented as never before.
Our last pass, as a matter of fact, and there are going to be literally thousands and thousands of film which will be developed and used to evaluate these techniques for the study of our crops, for the study of water resources, mineral deposits, and that sort of thing. So in the area of Earth resources, I think we do have fairly immediate benefits for all of our country and other countries as well.
Completed even time, so you haven't gotten it, you're cleared for soft dock.
Skylab, and we just went around the Mocha here, and you guys are go for undocking.
September 25th, mission day 60. And for this mission, time had about expired.
Hey, Dick, are you there?
Houston, AOS to Norman, 7 minutes.
We are docked on time. We're moving away. We indicated about 3/10 of a foot per second separation velocity.
Roger, we see that call, and if you did not copy
very good, Al, and we'll be watching.
We think we have seen enough TV here. We're clear to the TV. Can complete your photography if necessary, and you're clear for soft dock.
Recovery would be off Southern California by the USS New Orleans.
Skylab, bird looks super dust. You're going for deorbit and entry.
It's a little hinge door.
CDR Houston, do you read?
Look where it's toward the other tunnel, too. There's another tunnel. That's clean.
CDR Houston, do you read?
All right, let me read. We haven't seen it yet. Still almost too close, Pete.
You can look out. Look how it's scratched.
I'll back away.
Look how it scratched the gold shielding around the wardroom window. See that whole thing tore off of there? Right, the key parts right where all those wires are. See them hanging out that upper vent? We don't get it off there, we ain't gonna get it up, right?
A row of bolts.
That's a hinge line. You think it's what's left of a hinge?
Left of a row of bolts.
All right, is that far enough out to get a good view? Well, look at the banjo hinge. I gotta get down lower. The banjo hinge on this side of the main tunnel is just clean wiped off. See it?
The butterfly?
Butterfly.
TV camera is the worst.
Skylab Houston, do you read?
And look, it's
there.
Okay,
we're about 10 seconds of LOS. We'll be coming up on.
Yeah,
I don't
know what I'm
going to do. How's that? There's Don Lynn's experiment hanging on the side.
CDR Houston, do you read?
How much fuel are we using?
All my thoughts are jumbled, everything is blurred. All
My heart is numb. 'Twas like a bone.